Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 181 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is August 8th, 2011. We've got a great show for you this week on the podcast. If you don't know, the Peristyle Podcast is our weekly internet radio show talking all about the USC Trojans. We'd love to answer your questions on the show. So if you have any questions, drop us an email, podcast@uscfootball.com, or give us a call, 206-888-6755. That's 206-888-6755. Leave us a voicemail. We will play your voicemail on the podcast and answer any questions that you have for us. We've got a couple of those voicemail questions coming up today, and we are a few days into Fall Camp 2011. We're going to start off the show with Coach Harvey Hyde getting his thoughts on what's going on with this team. Coach, how you doing?
Ryan, I'm doing great, buddy. Just getting ready. I'm going to be out of practice tonight at the Coliseum where they have a little scrimmage going at 7 p.m. and I'll go out again on Wednesday and when they're in pads, and I'll have an opportunity to be more up to date than when you just run through play. So I'm looking forward to seeing you there tonight, and we'll be able to talk more about the Trojan football team next week after we've seen them.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week so far. I guess they started on Thursday, 2 days with no pads, and then Saturday and Sunday they put the pads on, really saw some intensity from the defense. So it's been really interesting, and tonight's the first day of full pads. Lane Kiffin really wanted to put together a scrimmage that's like a real game right away. A lot of young guys getting in there, so it should be a really interesting scrimmage tonight. And before we get into all that, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. Go to sctickets.com or call 1-800-888-7287 if you need tickets for anything. Sporting events, if you want to go to the theater with your wife, your girlfriend, husband, whatever. If you want to go to concerts, lots of good shows, anything like that, you can go to sctickets.com. And, of course, if you need USC football home tickets, there's 7 home games this year, Coach. There's a lot more opportunities to see the Trojans in L.A.
I think that's exciting to be able to get out. And this is the year you want to buy season tickets because you're going to see a lot of home games and big games. And it's exciting to get out there and watch Trojan football. And I certainly enjoy all the pregame hype, too, the tailgating and so on, and our pregame show that we do there. And then, of course, our Trojan brunch show on Sunday mornings that we do from your neck of the woods down there in Manhattan Beach. So, you know, it's getting close now, and camp started at mostly all campuses, and football season is here.
It is. I think everyone's excited just to see, just being out in the field, Coach, and seeing some of the hitting going on, being able to talk to the players. The off-season workouts are fun. We're down there covering them. But when camp starts and they put the uniforms on, especially when they put the pads on, you just get a better understanding of what's going on out there. And, man, just seeing more bodies. Lane Kiffin said I think they had 102 guys in uniform, so way more than what they had in the spring, way more than what they had last fall. They, you know, they can actually run a scrimmage where you have, you know, two or three offensive lines, and same thing with the, you know, linebacker core. And so there's a lot more bodies out there, and it gives these young guys an opportunity to show what they can do, but it also gives the veterans a rest, and it's more options for the coaches when you have, you know, three offensive lines you can actually go through instead of sharing one offensive line on both sides for scout team, for first, for second. It doesn't matter. So it just gives this coaching staff a lot more options now.
It really does, and I'll tell you, it gets you ready to play football. You know, you can't learn how to play football walking through things or not tackling and so on. And remember last year, USC had to do a lot of that because of lack of depth and injuries. And they didn't tackle well early and so on, and then they finally went back to hitting. You got to hit. The way you've learned how to play football is play football. That's both as an offensive player and a defensive player. You've got to learn to hit a moving target if you're an offensive player. You've got to learn to be able to tackle and settle up if you're a defensive player, or cover people on routes and so on, and don't miss tackles. And the only way you do that is by scrimmaging. Now, I always felt you could hit too much. You could hit your team out. So I always felt that when you had a scrimmage, it had to be something that was real important, really brisk, really meant something, had to mean something in the depth charts and so on. But because I sincerely believe you learned a lot by going through technique and understanding what you're trying to accomplish when you do go to team scrimmages. You've got to practice individual groups. You've got to practice inside, outside, 7-on-7, all these different things so that kids understand the purpose and why you're doing it or why you're attacking a certain way, wide side, short side of the field, how to learn where to line up on the field, what motion does to a secondary. And, you know, chalk talks are great, but kids actually learn on the field. So I started to move my meetings that we had in the rooms or in the offices. Of course, we watch all the tapes there, but all the new stuff I wanted to teach on the field. So we would go on the field and walk through all the things that I'd be drawing on a board. And the reason I used to do that, or how my coaches do that, was because you draw it on the board, then you go back on the field and you walk through it again. So you're wasting time. You're doing something twice. Why not have twice as much time explaining the purposes and why you do certain things and do it in a situation where they have hash marks, middle of the field, red zone, different things, so kids can picture the entire process, not just look at a board that you're drawing plays on. So, yeah, I really do. You know, one thing I want to mention too, Ryan, everyone's talking about how enthusiastic this group is out on the field, and Coach Kiffin has said that many times, and the reporters have been writing about that. If you remember, when you and I did one of our earlier shows this summer, we said, and I said, looking and watching your videos, that I've never seen more enthusiasm and more players on the field participating than ever before, in 7-on-7 and 11-on-11 and so on. This group has a different attitude. I really do believe this team has a different attitude. That team a year ago had a lot of question marks. I think this team has got an attitude, and I think an attitude is very important to being successful as far as lining up, and you have a purpose of why you're out there and what you're trying to accomplish. And I think this team is going to be very aggressive as long as everyone keeps it simple, everyone understands what they're supposed to do, and they stay where you don't overhit them. I think it's very important you don't overhit a football team.
That makes sense, Coach. Well, let's get to some questions here. We got a bunch of questions going in. And we are seeing a lot of hitting, and like you mentioned. I don't know, there wasn't enough hitting, I guess you could say, last year and in the spring. I mean, in the spring they did more, but like now they're going to try to hit more. So we'll see. I mean, maybe he overdoes a little bit, but it did look like so far that the defense was really getting after it, and they seemed to be playing with a little more reckless abandon. I think, you know, they weren't being hesitant. So we'll see. There is a delicate balance there, Coach. We'll have to see how that all works out. Well, I guess we'll start seeing some of that tonight at the Coliseum.
Well, I agree with you. And remember, the defense is always ahead of the offense. First of all, the defense has seen this offense. It's not like they're playing against a team they haven't seen before. They're prepared to go against USC's offense, but that's all they've seen. So they know what to expect and how to attack it and do this and that. And basically, I know they're going to get basic fronts and so on, because if I was Coach Kiffin, I wouldn't allow the defense to go crazy against me, because you're not ready to block all those different schemes and stunts and so on. So the defense will always be ahead of the offense at this stage of the game. So, you know, you've got to learn through mistakes. I hate to say that, but the way you learn the best is through mistakes. And obviously in their first couple of scrimmages, they've made some mistakes offensively, a couple of interceptions, things where bad decisions were made and so on. And those things have got to be cleared up. You're better to throw an incomplete pass than to throw an interception and not try to thread the needle or something and have a positive drive become a negative situation where they change a possession or something. And that is something that the quarterbacks are going to have to learn to do. You can't continue turning the ball over and putting the defense in a poor position and changing the momentum of a football game. You can't do that. And that's something I would say is the number one thing that has to be changed so far this year.
All right. Well, let's get to some of these questions. First up, we have Mark. Not really a question, but he wanted about what can you post some pictures of the new video board on the website. And we had J.K. McKay on our Ustream show on Thursday, and he talked about the video board being huge, and it looks like it's going to be ready for the first game. So we will be out. Coach and I can see it firsthand. We'll take some pictures tonight at the Coliseum. So, Mark, we'll be able to post those up. I can't wait to see that, Coach. I just want to see. I guess they have posts and stuff there. We'll see at least how big that board's going to be.
Well, we saw in the spring they're working on it. It's huge. It wraps around almost the entire close side of the west end of the Coliseum. I can't wait to look at it myself, and I hope they have it working tonight, too. That would be great to be able to – I hope they're practicing on it and so on to make sure that they get the right angles and the cameras and so on so we can observe, too, because I'd like to see some of the plays rerun and so on, as I hope they're going to plan on doing for this season.
Yeah, no, they should. I don't think it's – I don't know if it's quite ready for that. Maybe it is. I'm not sure what state it is right now, but we'll see what goes on with that. But thanks for that, Mark. Terrian wanted to know. He said, Coach, last year in response to my question, you indicated that the 7-on-7 drill focuses on the passing game, executing and defending. Is there a similar drill besides running a full team 11-on-11 that focuses primarily on the run game?
There certainly is, and before we ever went to 11-on-11, we always taught the techniques of running certain phases of our offense. We used to call it the inside drill, where you had center and two guards and two cones being the tackles, and we ran our entire inside offense drills against the defense live. It worked. It made the defense be a better defense. It made our offense block live people. We started, of course, blocking shields at first, and then we'd move up and we'd block live people as the practices went along. We did this every week. Every week this was part of our drills. We didn't just do it during camp. We have to continually teach your backs how to what they're going to see in a game as far as traps and reads and so on, and different parts of the field and so on. So we used to do that. We would do that, and we'd have safeties behind there, like strong safeties or free safeties, so that if the back broke through the line of scrimmage and we had a great play, then the strong safeties would have to learn, or the free safeties, how to make a tackle on a back in the open field. And also the back would have to learn how to make a move to get away from it. So this is something we would do real quickly over and over and over, and we would tape it and tape it and tape it and show it over and over and over in our meetings and so on, and that's the way we would teach our inside drill. Then we'd go to our outside drill that we called, where we'd have our tight end and guards, if we had a sweep called or some play like that, and we would have our receivers and defensive backs on the other side of the field, and we'd work our outside drills, which would mean we would come out and run all our outside plays where our receivers had to learn how to be physical, block a defensive back that was trying to come up and make a tackle, and our backs would have to make their breaks or moves or whatever they had to do to be able to make the play work. We'd even crack back, and when we ever worked on our crack back blocks, we would, of course, have the inside guy have a bag, teach the rule, and they're really going to enforce that rule this year as far as blocking down outside the tackle where you can't leave your feet. They're really going to enforce that rule, so that would be something I would be working on now to teach your guys how to block down so you don't get a penalty on that. And then we pull guards or lead with the fullback on the corners or strong safety, so these guys have to learn how to fill and how to make a tackle on a play. And we'd make it a tougher situation than what it would be for the offense in a game. Then occasionally we would throw in a pass or a sweep pass, and everybody would laugh because the receiver would come out and fake a block and go by the receiver or by the defensive back, and we'd throw a touchdown pass because the defensive secondary was cheating, obviously. So we had to keep them somewhat honest. So we would do this to the left. We'd do it to the right. We'd run all our outside drills. We'd tape it all. And we'd have to teach our receivers that their part of the football team is as important as a blocker as it is as a receiver. You're a football player. You've got to remember that all the techniques that you do, you have a responsibility on every single play, whether the play's towards you, away from you, a route, a draw, whatever. You've got to learn to be in position to make that block so that running back can make its move. You don't watch the play to say, oh, he got through the line of scrimmage, I'm going to make my block now. No. You go out and make your block, you don't even look at the play. You stay on the guy the entire time. And if he does break through, you're not looking to see. You'll watch it on Sunday when you see the tape. So, yes, there are many drills you do. Goal line situation drills, short yardage drills that you do, like you do 11-on-11 or 7-on-7, the same thing.
All right, Coach. Yeah, and typically at USC, they call it like a team run or a 9-on-7, and they do it on the Bryan Kennedy field on the side, somewhere in the middle of practice where the starting receivers and corners are off with some of the quarterbacks doing one-on-ones on the outside, and then everyone else is inside, and it just focuses on the running game. They'll throw some passes every once in a while, but it just focuses on the running game, and it gets all the coaches fired up when a big run is broken or a play is blown up. So it's definitely fun to watch out there. Well, here, thanks, Terrian, for that question. Here is one on the uniforms, Coach. This one's kind of interesting.
Good afternoon, Ryan. Good afternoon, guys. I just had a question about the USC uniforms. I know that there was some negativity about going to the alternate jersey because of tradition. And I was just wondering, you know, trying to compete with other universities like Oregon and other universities that have gone to alternate jerseys, you know, that's what excites the young people today. USC, if they did that, they won't damage their tradition. It will be just as strong. I try to use the example of the Lakers in basketball. They have the most strong tradition, and yet on Sundays they went to an alternate jersey, the white jersey, on Sundays at home, and it didn't hurt their tradition. It's just something I think with the sanctions and all the other negativity that the kids can't do. It seemed like it would be something positive to say, okay, you can do this, another reason to get excited for. I don't understand why the traditionalists are pushing back on that. Like your comments, yours and the coach's comments. Thank you and have a good day. Bye.
Well, thank you very much for your question. First of all, the reason the University of Oregon changes its jersey so much and so on, it's a Nike school, and you know who supports the University of Oregon, and that's Phil Knight, the owner of Nike. The more he can promote different color shoes, socks, jerseys, helmets, and all of that, which are probably given to the University of Oregon by Nike, the more he starts trends for other universities to want to do that. The more jerseys he sells, the more products he sells, the more shoes he sells, and everything else that goes along with it. So it has helped market the University of Oregon because everybody says, I wonder what they'll come out in today, what uniform they'll wear today. And as Coach Kelly said the other day, he's the last to know what they're going to wear. It's probably decided in the equipment room. He says he's got to worry about what the players are doing on the field, not what they're wearing. I think that's something that's probably been put at the University of Oregon, maybe not by the coaches or tradition, but also by what Mr. Knight would like to have them wear. And I think that is something that is a marketable thing, and everyone talks about it. That's why the question was even asked today. I'm a little bit different. I'm more of a traditional type of guy. I'm one that likes to be able to turn on the television and say, oh, that's Michigan playing today, or that's Ohio State playing today, or that's USC playing UCLA today. And I really like when USC and UCLA went back to their home jerseys and got that approved by the NCAA to be able to wear that in their home games because their colors do not conflict with each other and so on. I'm one that doesn't believe you need to put a name on the back of the jersey. Some universities have the name on the back of their jerseys. I remember when Randall Cunningham came up to me and says, Coach, we want to put our names on the back of our jerseys. I said, don't worry, Randall. I said, if you do enough out there, they'll find out what your name is. And I'm one that believes in tradition. I'm one that when you see a team, you know who it is. When your alumni players and alumni come back, they know what team you are. It's something that's been established. I see a lot of teams now going to the black uniforms and black trim and so on their jerseys, and I say, why are they doing that? Their colors aren't black, or they don't have that in their colors and their schemes and so on, and I'm not really sure why they're doing it. Arizona State has a new helmet or uniform this year, and I'm not quite sure. I haven't seen it, but I've heard that they have some new color schemes now in their uniforms at Arizona State. The changing of the socks at USC, they're going to a black sock this year. You know, of course, that's not my way of doing things, but if Coach Giffen wants to allow that to happen and so on, and the kids, they think they're faster, whatever the point might be, then so be it. But I'm one that would say you wear the traditional same sock that Marcus Allen wore or whoever, you know, and I don't think the sock's going to make a difference in your play. I'm not necessarily one for the C on the jerseys for the, as the captains at USC. And you know, the captains at USC, they have a C on it. And, you know, I can go through every university and tell you what I like or what I don't like. It's just my opinion. I don't think you have to distinguish who your captain is. I think everyone knows who your leader is and who your captain is. I'm not quite sure if Nike instructed USC that you would have to do that since they're a Nike school. I don't know. But they might have said, since you're not going to change your pants or your helmet or your jersey for us, we want you to start a C on your jersey. Maybe other schools will pick that up too, and that'll be another way for us to market more jerseys. But I don't know what happens behind the scenes or the purpose for that, but if a captain came up to me or an equipment guy came up to me and said, we want to put C on our jerseys to let everybody know I'm a captain, I'd say, you don't have to do that. I know who our captains are, and our team knows who our captains are, and we don't need to put a C on your jersey. But a lot of these things are governed by what school or what company supports you. And if you're a Nike school, a lot of times in these contracts, they dictate some things that you have to do because they do send you equipment, so many pairs of shoes and this and that and socks and whatever. You have a nice amount of equipment that comes to you from these different sponsorships. But no, I'm one of that is a traditional type of person. I'm one that says, hey, if these other players can wear this jersey and it's the same, I mean, Notre Dame did it. Remember, they come out with a green jersey or this color jersey and that color jersey, and then it flops, you lose, and then what do you think after the game?
Right.
We're going to burn the jerseys? You know, we've done that before. We buried a set of jerseys, and when we haven't played well, just to try to get people to say, hey, you know, well, that isn't going to happen again. You think I'm kidding you? We've done that. We've all come the money and dig a hole and bury them all. And but there's certain things you do as a coach, but that's one thing that I'm not really big on.
All right. We've got a couple more we'll try to get to before we let you go. Coach Jamal, who's not a big Lane Kiffin fan, said, Matt Barkley twice talked about his arsenal of weapons in regards to the talented receivers and backs he has this year. Would it be fair to say that Lane Kiffin cannot put these guys in space and get the matchups that SC should consider, at least consider downgrading his play calling rights? There are coaches out there who can do it, like Mike Leach or Mike Sherman at Texas A&M. No one has out-recruited USC in the last 5 years, and it's time to show some dominance or get away from this traditional offense we are in. What are your thoughts on that, Coach?
Well, you know, you always want to have success. You always want to be able to win. And, you know, if you're not winning at a certain level, then there's always questions that are out there saying, should we change this? Should we make a change in coaches? Especially the new trend now is before you get it as a head coach, you change your coaching staff. You blame your coaching staff and you make coordinator changes and everything else. Myself, I believe at USC, if there's a better group of receivers in the country, I want to know who it is. I really believe that USC has the best receivers in the country. I would say players who are not playing would start on many other teams. Most teams. They're great players, great receivers, great athletes, great speed. I don't know of a player out there that can really play in another Pac-10 situation or whatever. They are great players. As far as the running backs are concerned, they're young, but they're skillful. I think that they were as good as a high school football player anywhere in the country when they came to USC. Now, what you have to do, of course, and I've said this over and over, you've got to put them in a position, as long as you're with your receivers and so on, and the schemes and offense that you recruit to be successful. You've got to have an idea of what your offense is and defense is, and you recruit to that, and you say this person fits perfectly into what we want to do. So in your mind, as an offensive coordinator, as a coach, you have a philosophy, and you've got to be able to know what it is. It's like playing chess. You've got to be able to say if they're running this offense or that defense or whatever that's going on, if they do that, we're going to do this. If we run this play and that play isn't working, then obviously they're stopping that play because not because our guy isn't good enough to block that guy. It's because they have two guys to my one guy or whatever that situation might be, and you must be able to adjust immediately, not wait till halftime, not wait till the end of the game or watch it on Sunday and say we should have done this. I think you have to be simple. You have to execute properly. You don't have to have a lot of plays when you have better players than other teams, but you've got to put them in a position where they can be successful. And you've got to be able to spread the field, and you've got to be able to attack the defense. And you've got to make the defense question themselves of what you're going to do and how you're going to attack them. What philosophy you use, and whether it's a Mike Leach type of offense, obviously that was very successful for Texas Tech and Mike Leach. He was tremendous. It was fun to watch play. And then Arizona tried it, and other schools have tried it. For them, it hadn't been that successful. Yeah, they've won more games, but it hasn't been Texas Tech. So you've got to have a philosophy. You've got to be able to run that philosophy properly, and you've got to be able to use your personnel to the utmost of their ability where you can win and beat other teams with what your philosophy is. And I think SC has the potential. I think SC has great players, and I think that demonstrating their skills is part of the coaching staff and putting them in a position to win.
And just to follow up on that, Coach Jamal, I think you're a little too harsh on I know you know you're not a big fan of Lane Kiffin, but he went through – I'm not saying he's going to be the most successful coach ever. I don't know, but he's only been there a year. He went through the craziest, most unforgiving offseason that wasn't his fault coming through there. There's a lot of talent on this team. There are a lot of weapons. They're all unproven, or a lot of them are unproven. You have Robert Woods and a bunch of guys that you're not really sure about. I mean, Kyle Prater could be a superstar. He's never played a down. George Former, five-star guy. He's never played a down. Marquise Lee looks amazing. Victor Blackwell. You know, even Bryce Butler, who's coming back with a bunch of experience, hasn't played all that much. I mean, there's not a lot of proven talent on this team. Yeah, they're weapons, but we haven't seen them perform yet. I don't think you can blame, Lane Kiffin that Kyle Prater redshirted and all that stuff. So, I mean, there's, we haven't seen DJ Morgan yet. He could be a huge home run threat. You know, there's a lot of unproven talent on this team. So we'll see. I mean, I just think it's a little too harsh to come out and say you got to strip Lane Kiffin of his play calling duties already. He's been there 1 year. I think you have to give him a little bit of time and get, this is the first year he's going to have enough players to scrimmage against each other. You know, I mean, they didn't have enough offensive linemen before. So I think there's a lot to be said. You got to wait for this year at least, and then kind of take a look back and see what happens. And then, Coach, one last thing from Ed. He says, I like the fact that competition determines who starts and who gets to play. However, I feel this staff and Carroll's the last couple of years leave questions out there too long. When players don't know if they're starting or not, they lose confidence. At what point does that become detrimental? Just because you tell a guy he's the man doesn't mean he can't lose his starting job. For example, it's all well and good that Red Ellison is practicing at fullback, but then he loses reps at tight end. More importantly, he takes reps away from younger fullbacks. I understand they are young, but it's even more important to give them reps to develop and gain confidence. Just my thought. I think we use the excuse of players being young and inexperienced too much. We have the players 4 to 5 years. We're going to have to use that. Give the players a chance to step up, and you'll be surprised at you'll be surprised how many who do, not how many who don't.
Well, I agree with that. I think that you have to let your team know after camp or whenever you decide to put your depth chart out or tell them who your starters are. And I believe there's a rhythm to 11 guys playing together, 11 on offense, 11 on defense with substitutions on defense for different schemes or down distance situations and so on. On offense, I don't believe that you should have to substitute every darn down for a certain play that you're going to call. I think you should be able to have players, especially at USC, where you can run 11 guys in there and you can run series of plays and they're in shape enough to drive down the field and do whatever they need to do to complete a drive for a field goal or touchdown. I don't like to do a lot of substituting. I like to give a responsibility to someone and say, here it is, you're the guy, get it done. If you can't get it done, there's someone else who can take your place, and someone can move up. I believe that the substitution portion of going over and over in substitution takes the rhythm out of your offense especially. I really believe that. I believe a guy's got to have a feel of the game. He's got to be able to be in there for a long period of time. Saying he's not conditioned is a cop-out. You better be conditioned to be able to go 15, 20 plays in a drive without looking to the sideline, pointing to your chest and say, I need a break, I need a break. If a guy would look to me and say, I need a break, I'd take him out and I'd say, go home and sleep it off. You've got to be able to be tough and ready to go. In the old days, guys could carry the ball, not old days, but normally days you can see backs carrying the ball 40 times, 35 times a game, as last year Bradford did and Tyler did at times. And you play yourself in the shape. If you're running on and off the field all the time, you're not playing yourself in the shape. You play yourself in the shape by playing football, by conditioning your mind and your body with techniques and your thoughts of how you organize your different schemes at different plays and different timings of plays and so on by being in the game, by handing off the football, by seeing what happened the last time you ran that play. The next time they run that play, you know what happened the last time, you might do it differently. So, yeah, I'm one that likes to give their positions to somebody. And the rest of them, yeah, they're backups. You know, they're not going to be happy being backups. And that's one thing you got to remember. People aren't happy when you're great players and you're not playing. Now, to answer the second part of that question, if the best player is a freshman and he can start, he's going to play. I want you to know that right now, because the team knows who the best player is. I'm gonna tell you right now, if you allowed your teammates to name the starting lineup at every position but their own, they'd put the best player on the field every single time. Why? They know who the best players are. When the best players aren't playing, then they say, what's going on? He's better than him, or he has better hands than him, or he can block better than him. So I think the best players have got to be on your field or find a place to put them on the field. You got to have your players playing, otherwise you are making a coaching error. And kids today aren't stupid. Kids today know what you're asking for. Kids today know when you're having or playing favoritisms. Kids today know when you yell at one and you don't yell at the other. You got to treat everybody the same. All they want to know is where they stand and what they have to do to play.
All right, Coach. Well, great stuff, and thanks for all the questions, everyone that wrote in, and thank you, Coach. We'll see you out there tonight at the Coliseum, and we're looking forward to talk to you next week after you soak in a few practices and get your thoughts on what some of these players are doing.
I'll see you at the Coliseum tonight, buddy.
All right, Coach. Thanks again, and thanks to our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. We're going to be back in 30 seconds talking to USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
Welcome back to the Peristyle Podcast. We have on the line USCFootball.com beat writer Dan Weber. He's been out to every practice watching this team, going through all the drills, getting ready for the scrimmage tonight at the Coliseum. How's it going, Dan?
Pretty good, and enjoy it. They're long practices. It's getting used to. Last year they were longer practices, but they didn't have as many players. There's a whole lot more guys to look at this year, and just a lot more talent on the field. More athletes, more guys. You just want to kind of pick up on. It's kind of interesting. I think the players themselves have been sort of caught up in, wow, we've got a whole lot more guys. You know, the offensive linemen, you know, after a couple of years of kind of being one deep some days for drills, you know, look around and they got three full units to go. And so they kind of like it, but it does change the dynamics of, everyday practice.
No, it does for sure. And just having some new five-star, four-star talent in the ranks there that look like they can play, I think it's going to make a big difference. And that's probably our first question. Evan wanted to know, two of those guys, how Lamar Dawson and Andre Walker look so far. Lamar Dawson, the linebacker from Kentucky, and Andre Walker, the big offensive lineman from Cleveland, Ohio.
Well, they're both getting a lot of chances. I think they're both perfectly situated with Andre as a middle linebacker on the second unit, and Andre is an offensive tackle on the second unit, and Lamar in the same position behind Gallippo on the second unit. So they're getting a lot of quality reps. Both of them are bigger than you expected, even though you expected them to be pretty big, good-looking athletes. Lamar came in at 240 and bigger, stronger up top, and probably a little longer limbed. He just has a slightly different look to him, not a typical freshman look. And then you look at Andre, and he doesn't look like almost anybody you can think about. He's not like oversized in a way that, say, if you remember Deuce Latouille, who was so humongous, and he was about 335, and, you know, Andre's, you know, 32 pounds bigger now. He probably wants to lose some of that, but it's not a real obvious situation where he, you know, has to lose a lot of weight or looks like he's just, you know, too big to play. I think both of them are physical and deliver blows in ways in which you like to see freshmen. I mean, they like to engage people, and they like to deliver shots. They've got an aggressiveness about them that you don't always see with freshmen. They just are naturally, physical and aggressive, and, you got to like what you see with both of them. And you like the way that they're not being, forced into anything where they have to play or they have to do this or that, but they're getting plenty of chances to, learn what they've got to learn and show what they can do. I think with Andre on the offense, I think it's probably easier, even though normally an offensive lineman might be the hardest place to go when you're a freshman, true freshman. I think they've tried to make it really simple, and by starting him at the tackle spot, and possibly working him in the guard, they really want to, not overload him with too much. I mean, it's asking a lot, though, for Lamar to come in and play middle linebacker as a true freshman. So you would guess that they're – and Gallippo's looked really good. So you would guess that and with the other, guys like Will Andrew, Dallas Kelly – they've got a lot of numbers at that middle linebacker, so you could, if Gallippo can play as much as it looks like he might with his, experience, his health, he's running really well, his weight looks good, that they won't have to force Dawson in there, but that they're going to give Dawson plenty of chance to play. And I guess there's also the option that they could move him outside a little bit, but I'm thinking the way you look at the linebackers now, they're really going with athletes who can just really, really run at that outside, at those outside spots. And the guys they've got in there now, Shane Horton, Hayes Pillard, Marcus Simmons, Deion Bailey, all can really fly. And I thought it was interesting that Media Day, Lane talked about, 630 of the 800 and some snaps against USC last year were either three or four wide receiver formations. So you need to be ready to, defend the entire field with really good quickness. So what USC's done with the defensive ends by bringing Kennard back to a defensive end, to put athletes on the edge with Horton, Wes Horton and Nick Perry, along with Kennard, and then really quickening up the outside linebackers by moving Deion Bailey up from safety, tells you that, they're going for, quickness and kids who can run. And so we're getting to see an awful lot of stuff, and an awful lot of guys are getting to play. And those three-hour practices, they're getting in. I mean, they in four practices, they've probably gotten in as many plays as maybe – it took them six or seven practices last year to get in. They just couldn't run that many plays because they didn't have enough bodies.
Yeah, I agree 100% there, Dan. And we're getting to see a lot more action out there, which is fun. We should see a bunch tonight. One of the other questions, this is a voicemail question. This is, has to do with some of the freshman offensive linemen, including Andre Walker, and where they fit in.
Hi, this is Ron.
Well, I mean,
Wait, Dan, here's a question.
And my question for the podcast is, they expect the two freshmen to start on the offensive line from the beginning of the year. I'm speaking mostly about Walker and Hobby, the two highly recruited offensive linemen, considering the issues we have on the offensive line. Do you really expect those two guys to be able to start from day one, or do you expect that to be more of a transition as the season goes along, one or both of those guys grab a spot there on the offensive line? Thanks.
I would definitely, you know, unless there are injuries, be surprised if either one of them starts from day one. I think that may be pushing it. Having the three home games early in the year gives you a chance to transition in. I know Lane said at Media Day, at Pac-12 Media Day, that, you know, it wouldn't be impossible to have two freshmen starting. He just wouldn't see them starting next to one another. But I'd be really shocked. That would be shocking. I just think right now Walker looks like the only one who's physically capable of playing in this group. I mean, I think, for example, a guy like Abe Markowitz, if his foot holds up, he's really a good player. He can play both guard spots, I mean, you know, and center. And so, you know, I'm looking there first. If you're thinking about, okay, if we've, you know, projected, you know, the guys who've been playing, you know, on the first unit, which would be, you know, McAleo at left tackle, Kevin Graff at right tackle, Callan Holmes at center, and the guards that they switched around from left to right, but John Martinez now on the right side and Jeremy Galton on the left side. If you're going to pick a guy who would be the first guy to go in, I don't think it'd be Markowitz right now. I would think he's looked healthy, good. He's strong. He's explosive. You know, former shot putter. He's a real smart kid. You know, unfortunately missed last year with that foot fracture he got in the last week right before the Hawaii game. But I would look that direction first. Then Andre Walker, I think he certainly does have a chance to move in there somewhere or get significant playing time. He's just, you know, I mean, again, a lot of that will be determined. They've only put 25% of the offense in right now, Lane estimated. So a lot of that will be determined by how well he's able to pick it up. I like what they do when they bring in and they'll have, Matt Khalil, you know, sits next to Walker and all the offensive line meetings. They have Marcus Martin, you know, rooms with Matt. Kevin Graff was talking about how they kind of, you know, are mentoring the younger guys and that. And I think they're doing a really good job of that. So I think they're bringing them on, but I think it's in a transition situation. I think it's awfully – I think the offensive line isn't as in as dire straits as people think it is. I think, you know, just the numbers situation from the last couple of springs, I think, has made everybody, you know, very conscious of the offensive line. And you had a number of guys graduate last year. But I think there's a lot of quality there. And it may turn out not to be the situation where you needed to bring in freshmen to, play immediately. I would be surprised. And again, I'd be surprised if anybody other than Walker is capable of starting. It just doesn't look like they're in that situation yet.
And Hobby has looked pretty good at practice and stuff. And it'll be fun to watch them all tonight and through the rest of fall camp to see where they kind of fit in. But just having the number of bodies there seem to be doing wonders.
Right. I mean, Hobby, you know, I think Hobby probably needs a little physical maturing. He just, you know, might not quite be there physically. I think he's got a lot of good, you know, he's one of those guys you just think, okay, he's going to be, you know, ready to make the next step. And maybe even by the end of the fall, you never know. It's just, it would be asking a lot. I would think he's a little undersized at probably not even 280 yet, and that'd be a challenge. We'll see. The future offensive line looks pretty good. I think Marcus Martin's going to get his weight down to where it has to be. I think Cody Temple, we haven't gotten to see because of his back. He's an aggressive, tough kid. We'll see. It does seem like they've got him in the right place, and they've got kids with talent.
Okay, JJB had a question on redshirting any of the new receivers. Robert Woods. George Farmer's been out there, Victor Blackwell, Marquise Lee. Do you think USC is going to redshirt any of these new guys?
Well, I think they have to. I think you talked to Coach Baxter yesterday, and he said that decision will be made at the end of the year, not now. They let the kids kind of decide for themselves, and they let the circumstances make those calls. You would be surprised if they didn't have to, decide eventually that one or two of those kids are going to get redshirted. Yeah, I just don't think there's just not enough playing time, for all of them. And I think as Kyle Prater, showed, there's some real value, in giving a kid an extra year coming out of high school. So, I think without a doubt, some of those kids are going to be redshirted. And that's the strategy. Also, I think to deal with the out years in the scholarship sanction situation.
I think that'll help out there. And, it could be like a George Farmer comes in and does really well on one of the kick return teams, and maybe that stops him from getting a redshirt. I think it could be special teams contributions. Baxter told me yesterday, they're trying everybody everywhere on special teams. So if one of those guys steps up, or maybe it's Marquise Lee or whatever, for whatever reason, if one of those guys steps up and becomes a key role on one of the special teams units, it's less likely for him to redshirt that way. So it's not just going to be receiver, but also be where they can contribute on special teams too.
Yeah, I think, we'll see how Farmer does, maybe paired up with, Woods and an all-star kickoff return backfield, and whether he's, sure enough in that situation where they can block the way C.J. Gable did, as the off guy back there. He's certainly explosive enough. He's certainly powerful enough. He's certainly, fast enough to really, contribute there if that's something that he wants to do and can do. I think they would give him a shot there. And I think they're probably going to have a couple of special kinds of opportunities to get him the ball. Maybe on reverses, maybe on that where they just throw that dart on quick hitch out there and hope, somebody, either a defender goes for the ball or goes for George and misses, and he just takes it up the sideline and just, runs past people. I think he's going to get some opportunities in some special situations to see if his special talents, can pay off this year. I think George will definitely get, a chance to show. And he's a freshman. I mean, he had some struggles the last couple of days, catching the ball, more trouble on easier catches. He can make some, really, really good plays, but it's a big, big adjustment. I mean, the thing you forget about him, he's got an NFL body. I mean, he was a high school player in an NFL body. When he walks by you, he looks like he should be walking out with the Jets or somebody. I mean, he just has that really unusually mature, athletic, strong, explosive, 6'1", I guess, 205. Just looks like he ought to be in an NFL uniform. So, and yet he still, hadn't played, a down yet against college players. So, but they're going to give him a chance, I guarantee you, and see if that, special talent and, all those skills that he has, can be brought to bear this year.
All right, here's a question from Lance. He said, a little while back, Pat Hayden noted the travel inconvenience to the team from the Notre Dame night game, which will likely reduce time to prepare for Stanford. We play Cal, Notre Dame, Colorado, all on nationally televised night games, two on weeknights. Can you ask Dan how the staff is going to adjust these unusual preparation travel issues? As always, thanks to you and the staff for all the great coverage.
Well, I guess the one thing that where you really do benefit is is you're coming west. So, you know, they're going to get home, I think, right now. The travel plans after Notre Dame is 2:30 in the morning. So I doubt if that's going to change things that much if they had a West Coast game, you know, 2 hours time difference. So I'm not sure that that's the difference. I swear the difference will be that entire day in South Bend or in Michigan City waiting for the game. I mean, that's going to be a really long Saturday. Obviously, they're going to sit there and watch college football, and they're going to probably have them out in the parking lot for a walkthrough, and they're going to occupy them in meetings and things like that. But I think the challenge in the Notre Dame game is playing that, you know, first ever night game in South Bend with Notre Dame. That'll be, I think it's that part of the travel schedule and the adjustment to the night game that I think is more difficult there. I do think the Cal game, they at least have 10 days. You know, that's there's not a Saturday game before that, so that's a plus. You know, the Notre Dame, that, you know, gives them a little bit of shortened by just a couple of hours, you know, to get ready after Notre Dame, they come back and play Stanford. And they played Cal the week before, but they've got 9 days off, or they're 9 days between Cal and Notre Dame, and then Stanford is a Saturday, the next Saturday. But I think that, you know, they're only going to lose a couple of hours to get ready for Stanford. And before the Cal game, again, they've got 12 days to get ready for Cal on Thursday night. So the fact that they're all road games makes it. You know, I'm not sure if that actually helps or hurts when you think about adjusting to different, days of the week, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday for those three road games. I think it probably hurts you more in adjusting at home to your classwork and things like that, you know, for the week, the games that won't be played on Saturday. I think actually it's probably almost easier to adjust for a road game. It's a different, either at a different time or a different day than it is for, a home game, because you kind of really lock in your home, Saturday home preparations. One of the good things we're seeing, I guess, in this fall now, it's kind of a challenge to us, is, you know, they've got about 9 different starting times for practice, you know, from early morning to, you know, late at night. I mean, we will probably be still in the Coliseum tonight at 11, I'm almost certain. I think the preseason practice schedule is actually going to get them ready for all different game times and all different starts and what have you. I think this is going to, you know, work out to their benefit. But it's definitely something they have to factor in. How they're going to do it, we'll see. I mean, I wish, I'm a believer in the walkthroughs. I love the walkthroughs on the road. And with the kind of unique places they're going to be going, first-time places. This will be the first time Lane's taking a team to Notre Dame. And you have them there, you get there Thursday night, so you'll have them there all day Friday. One of the big, fun moments of every other year for us has always been the walkthrough at Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend, and you see, Joe Montana is there and Anthony Munoz is there and all that kind of, it's just kind of a neat thing. So far, Lane has decided no walkthroughs, so that gives you a long day on Friday on top of a long day on Saturday if you don't go over to Notre Dame, if you don't go over to the campus. So I'm not sure, Lane's much more in the NFL model where you show up, for the game, play the game, and go home. We'll see how that works out. But that does give you a lot more time on your hands, let's say, on a 2-day trip, back east when you're going to South Bend.
All right, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do there. I know a lot of USC fans want some revenge for what happened in the Coliseum last year. A couple quick ones.
And they also like the idea of a lot of USC fans spend all day on the campus at Notre Dame on Friday. And it breaks up the day, and, they all show up at the stadium, and Notre Dame's getting ready for their big pep rally, and they got their band, breaking up all over campus and playing around campus, and there's thousands and thousands of fans, and if the USC team shows up, usually they got that bus, the bus is rocking, back and forth and all that kind of thing, and park right next to the stadium, and there's, probably almost always like 1,000 or so fans waiting for him to get off the bus on Friday even. And it's kind of a big pick-me-up, so we're lobbying to get Lane to, you know, if you're going to do, you know, think about doing one walkthrough. Do that one at South Bend. That's always a lot of fun. I think one of the challenges was Pete Carroll did those walkthroughs so well. They were just so choreographed in ways in which, you know, no one else did them, that it's almost a challenge for if you're the next guy coming in, if you're Lane. That's just not what Lane does. He's not into, you know, the kinds of, you know, game playing and all that kind of stuff that that Pete did. And there are, you know, all kinds of successful ways of doing things. You know, we'll see if how that plays out. But we are going to be lobbying to see if we can get him to do one walkthrough at Notre Dame. Okay.
All right. And then last couple of questions here. JJB again was asking, people like Steve Dillon, when they get released from their letter of intent, does that free up an extra scholarship? So he was a guy that didn't make grades, and then you know, he actually went, I forget where he went. He went elsewhere.
Marshall, I believe.
Marshall, yeah. He went Marshall. Over to Marshall. So, yeah, I mean, so, but yeah, obviously that frees up a scholarship.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there was there's no issue there. We're still waiting on two, Javaris Allen, the big running back out of Tallahassee, and Junior Palme from the Inland Empire, the tight end wide receiver. So we still haven't seen them. Lane Kiffin said maybe this weekend, which was this past weekend. We didn't see him out there, so maybe we'll see them tonight at the Coliseum.
Right. He was pretty optimistic. I'm more so, I think he surprised all of us last week when he seemed to be pretty optimistic that they, and some of that might be just trying to be real optimistic, you know, with those kids who were both finishing up their final high school course. I think in Junior Palme's case, it was some kind of an oversight where the high school didn't realize that, you know, he'd missed something, or they missed, you know, they, you know, sometimes it's in the way the course is described or exactly how it's counted, and they can be close but not quite to one of the core curriculum courses. And so, and I don't think anybody at USC caught it, or it seemed like it was, you know, a course that, you know, they gave him what he needed, and then they finally, you know, somebody saw it and realized, nope, you got to go back and finish that up this summer. So they seemed pretty upbeat about him. And, you know, after most of us had probably said, you know, maybe we won't ever see Buck Allen, Lane was much more positive about the possibility of, you know, Buck Allen getting through his final course and being able to be on campus. So we'll see. I would think tonight ought to be able to, you know, we ought to be able to get a fairly definitive answer about those two guys.
Okay. And then one last thing. We didn't have Gerard on this week, so this is kind of a recruiting question. We can get your thoughts, and I'll weigh in and stuff as well. A couple of people wanted to know how many offensive linemen USC is going to sign. I think Gerard's addressed that a bunch of times before. There is a lot of great, talented offensive linemen, but you know, I think some of it's going to depend on how this group looks right now. We've seen a lot of good talent from this group. But the other one was, with limited scholarship offers, why did USC offer all these running backs, Russell, Kelvin York, Pinner, that are committed? And then what about, you know, Ryan McDaniel, who had an offer, and Byron Marshall, who did not have an offer? We actually just got an offer, so there's another one offered. And just quick thoughts on that. I think a lot of it is that, I mean, Lane Kiffin has to keep options open because there are limited scholarships. I think there might be some offers out there that maybe get dropped off later. There's a scholarship offer, but you know, maybe they're not going to recruit the kid anymore any longer. It just depends on what goes on. I think Lane Kiffin needs to keep his options open. And there's a
You're competing. For example, I was reading the Chicago Tribune this week, this weekend, and there's a kid who is the number one prospect at in the state of Illinois, 300-pound defensive lineman. And the story was he got calls within a half hour on, I think it was Saturday, telling him, from one from Michigan, one from Notre Dame, he was within a half hour also of announcing he was going to commit to Notre Dame. He got a call from Michigan a half hour earlier saying, we're sorry, our offer, we just got a kid from somewhere else in the country, and we're going to have to retract our offer. So then he said, okay, well, that makes it clear. I'm going to Notre Dame. Right before he called Notre Dame called him and said, we just got a commitment, and we don't have a scholarship available for you. So the kid, number one player in the state of Illinois, got two rejections back-to-back within a half hour from Michigan and Notre Dame. So that's the world you exist in out there now. And those are schools that aren't under any limitations scholarship-wise. And not hesitant to do that, to the number one player in Illinois. So I think we're going to just have to let the offers and the retractions and the development of this year's freshman class and all that play itself out. I would probably not try to overthink the numbers and the offers and all of that. It's probably not, it's not something you can really figure out at this point in time. I just think you have to offer kids, and I'm sure, and clearly with every offer is the understanding that we have a limited number of scholarships. I mean, even if you've got full scholarships, there's a limit. And so I think with all those offers, there is a limit to, it's not an unlimited offer. It's not like,
And I think you need to get in early.
That limitation.
Yeah, if you can get in early on some of these kids, even like a Jake Rodriguez who they offered, it was committed to Oregon, the quarterback. When you do something like that, you're at least in on him early. So if something weird happens and Barkley leaves and a kid transfers, you didn't offer the kid at the last minute. You kind of kept your you started in a little bit early. So just starting the process, I think, a little bit early, maybe not with the intention of recruiting him later, but with the potential to recruit him later. I mean, Lane Kiffin really has a tough job over the next few years, so I think he's going to be pulling on all the stops and doing whatever he can to make his be able to make these last second moves if he has to at any time just to fill up the class.
Right, you don't want to turn somebody off that you don't really have to, and you might think we've got really no shot at this kid, but why not tell him, you could play for us, we like you, we would take you, right now we would absolutely take you, and you might be sixth on that kid's list, but you just never know how it might play out, and there's no sense in alienating a kid or making it seem like you can't play for us. I mean, he may go somewhere else, but, you don't want him mad at you. You want to say, hey, we like you. We may not have enough room we may not have room for you the way this all breaks down. But I think the kids understand that. The kids, have no hesitation to, saying, well, I'm committed to so-and-so, but I'm going to visit these other four schools, whatever. Everybody, seems to be doing that now. So I think there's kind of an understanding that, how this is all playing out. But you just, you tell a kid, hey, we like your talent. We like your classwork. We think you'd fit in here. And, probably the good thing is those kids are going to go somewhere else. But, they respect, that USC coaches treated them, fairly and didn't, put them down or anything. And I think that's probably a very, very smart way to do it. So don't overthink who's been offered, what position, and what does that mean? We don't even know we've seen this freshman class. They're here. They're out there on the practice field. We still have no idea how a lot of those kids are going to develop. So the idea that you could figure out, kids that haven't even gone through their, senior year of high school yet, and how that's all going to play out is probably overthinking it a little bit.
Right. Well, that's the world of recruiting. But thanks.
That is the world of recruiting.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Dan, for coming on and joining us and answering all the questions. Thanks, everyone out there, for asking those questions. And I'm sorry we didn't have Gerard on again. It's been a little crazy with fall camp starting, but we'll try to get him on next week and get to more of your recruiting questions. But thanks again, Dan, and we'll see you tonight at the Coliseum.
Very good. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. See you on.
And everyone else, we'll be back next week talking USC football on the Peristyle Podcast.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.